Houston standing by. Over.
Jeremy and Joe starts now.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Hello, Houston. It's Jeremy and Joe. He's Joe. I'm Jeremy. Brian's here, too. Keep on the bless. Say hi, Brian.
You said that with less enthusiasm than you did the rest of it. I caught on to.
It was good ears there. You got good ears.
You didn't deny it, though.
Who sings the song?
I don't know, but I like it.
It's like punk rock. Does that fit us?
Doesn't fit you.
What does fit us?
Selena.
That fits you? I don't think that fits me.
Yeah, I don't think Joe is half Mexican.
Definitely not.
I gave it away.
You're not Mexican.
He kind of looks like Canelo.
If Canelo was
a... Canelo is a ginger, and I've got the red mustache.
Yeah, Canelo's a ginger, yeah. He's muscular, he's taller.
All those things.
He's a millionaire.
I wish.
And he's fighting Terrence Crawford this Saturday.
Joe's like if Canelo Alvarez and Mike Ditka had a baby right now.
And the baby got 95% of his genetics from Mike Ditka.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Lots to get to today. Well, Texans are doing things. The offensive line is brutal. They did sign a tight end today. Well, they didn't really sign him. They activated him. Harris Bryant. We have game balls to give out.
I do not know this man.
Back to back, huh? Who do you not know? Oh, Harrison Bryant.
Yeah, who?
Do not know
this
man.
It's a good question.
Week one overreactions, the whole thing. But, of course, we're starting with the Astros, which I'm scoreboard watching right now. This is kind of pathetic that I am scoreboard watching how do you phrase this? The top team that's not currently in the playoffs. The Texas Rangers are the first team out of the playoffs in the American League. You currently lead the Texas Rangers by 2.5 games, or you're out of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Rangers have the tiebreaker on you, by the way. You do play them 3 more times. You need the sweep to flip the script. And, like, who cares about the, they call it silver glove, silver boot? I think it's silver boot.
That's
like, who
is.
Cares about that? But if you and the Rangers are tied at the end of the season and you don't sweep the Rangers in that final series you have against them, they would then own the tiebreaker and you would be out of the playoffs. So I am scoreboard watching the Rangers and the Brewers right now, which the Brewers have the best win percentage in all of baseball. They're arguably the best team in baseball. Record-wise, they are the best team in baseball. They're on the verge of being swept by the Rangers.
Yeah.
Rangers lead that game 3-2 halfway through it.
I mean, the Rangers have won 3 games in a row, might about to be win their 4th. The Mariners have won 4 games in a row, and the Astros have lost 2 games straight. The Rangers are coming in hot. Like they've got the pieces. Unfortunately, they've got guys getting healthier. It seems like Corey Seager could be back for this Astros series with his appendectomy. So they're just going to get better even as this gets closer and closer to the end of the season. They're right there. They're a real problem for the Astros right now, honestly.
Yeah, this is really the Astros are a problem for the Astros. There are 17 games left in the season. They lead the American League West now by 1 game, and their lead on the playoffs outright is 2.5 with a team that currently owns the tiebreaker on you. So the Astros are in a quandary. They're in a very difficult spot as we talk to you today. And the Astros, since the start of July, by the way, they have not been a good baseball team. Numbers to back this up, they are 28-33 since July 1st. It's in a below average baseball team.
Yeah, and they're playing like that on a nightly basis. And the injuries have obviously not helped, and that seems to just get worse every single day. It's like they cannot escape a bad injury report or something bad happening during the game right now. Even when it feels like things are starting to get a little bit better with the injuries, it feels like it flips on its head all of a sudden.
Yeah.
It's worse, but they're a below average baseball team at
below
this
average.
Point. They're not good.
They're not good.
They're not playing good baseball, and it's... like we heard last year, Jeremy, the Houston Texans would always say that they're going to turn it on. They never turned it on. The Astros need to turn it on at this point, but they're not showing you anything that they honestly can. The struggles that they're facing seem to be a real honest issue across the board, and last night was just another example of everything that's going wrong with this team.
No doubt. Starting with Abreu, we'll get to the Luis Garcia thing too, because... very likely that's the last time we see Luis Garcia in a Houston Astros uniform.
It's unfortunate, but
get to
yes.
that in a minute. But how about Brian Abreu blowing that game? Like, there was a lot of things that happened yesterday, and it should have been a good win. Like, hey, Garcia's hurt, and that stinks, but blue ball looked terrific. He picked you up. The offense does enough. Correa in the three spot got you a two-run knock there in the first inning. Yay, things are going good. You turn it over to Abreu, who's in his career been very good, has been really good up to about 2 weeks ago. You hand him the ball with a 3-1 lead. I think it was 5-6-7 in the lineup for Toronto. That's a game you got to win. That's a game you got to win in a pennant race. That's a game you got to win with 18 left to go. That should have been a very good win to start the road trip. Instead, Abreu can't throw a strike, walks a couple of dudes, gives up a couple of knocks. It was a miracle he got out of the ninth inning, second and third one out, got back-to-back strikeouts. But that one's going to sting. That one doesn't feel good.
It's a disaster. It's a disaster loss for them. Brian Abreu is not a closer. He can't do it. He doesn't got the goods. He can be the best eighth inning guy in Major League Baseball, but we see the inverse of this last year. We see Ryan Pressly, you take him out of the ninth inning role, and he was falling off anyways. You can catch him Thursday at tailgate. But like you see guys who are closers who move into eighth inning roles, and they just for some reason it doesn't work. With Brian Abreu, it feels like it's not working for him in the ninth inning. He has, I don't know if it's a confidence thing or what it is, but he's been a mess in the closer role. It has not been clean, even when he's gotten saves. It's not an easy 1-2-3. And without Hader, and I know the Astros are optimistic that Josh Hader could be back for the postseason.
Yeah.
I'll believe it when I see it. The Astros have a closer problem. A real, real closer problem. Nothing like last year. Hader wasn't great last year all the time, but he still was a pretty good closer. This one feels like a real problem.
I think you're overstating it based on what happened yesterday. I think you're going to a little bit to the extreme. Like, he's not capable of pitching in the ninth inning. Like, he's done it before, and he was actually pretty good in this first couple of situations to pitch the ninth inning once Hader went down. It's recent struggles. It's three of the last four. Like, he had three perfect innings as the closer prior to this recent stretch where he hasn't been good. I don't believe in the mental block here. I do think that he has the goods-ish to be a closer. I can't get to where you're going.
He's got 20 career blown saves.
Okay, but that's a little misleading because if you blow a lead in the eighth inning, that counts as a blown save.
That's true, and it's why I don't like the statistic the way that they frame it.
But then why'd you use it?
Because it's still a fact. He still has 20 career blown saves. I don't believe in him right now when he's out there in the ninth.
Okay. Well, we disagree on the Brian Abreu. Can he pitch the ninth inning? Like, yesterday was bad. The stretch is bad. I think it's more of a bad stretch than it is, like, he is not capable to be a closer. I think he's more than capable of being a closer. We've seen the stretches where Brian Abreu is nasty. We've seen the stretches where he's dominant. And his most recent stretch actually had three games where he was pitching in the ninth at the end of it. There was other games he was pitching in the ninth inning because Hader was unavailable. He's in a bad stretch right now, no doubt about it. I'm not going to defend the command. Like, throw strikes, man. Like, you have a two-run lead. Like, hey, if the other guy hits a home run off of you, that's why, like, Eniel De Los Santos yesterday, he challenges George Springer with a 3-1 fastball, and George Springer hit it to, like, I think it crossed the border. I think that ball went to America. I don't know the way that they're, you know, aligned
Stadium.
There. Yeah, maybe it went, like, north of Canada. I have no idea. But that ball went a long way, 450 feet. But I tip my cap for De Los Santos, like, challenging him. You're up by two runs. Challenge him. If he hits a ball to the moon, he hits a ball to the moon. My frustration with Abreu is were the walks. Like, I can live with the hits. The other guys are making money, too. But when, especially a leadoff walk, the walks are the things that really bothered me last night about Abreu.
And you know they're gonna unravel. And every closer the Astros have had in the past, when they start walking guys, things, it's when it would go bad for Pressly, for Hader, for Asuna. When you start walking guys, it unravels. You're right. He has to attack more when he's on the mound. It can fix some of these things. And command hasn't been a huge thing. So if it's just a command problem, then that can be alleviated. If it's a mental block, then it's a challenge. But also at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. Like, there's no other good option for the Astros. Craig Kimbrell is not an option to close.
See, I saw that scuttlebutt going on the internet yesterday. Like, people were clamoring to remove Brian Abreu from the closer's role, move Craig Kimbrell into the closer's role. So you're not willing to go there? Like, you don't love Abreu as a closer, but you know with this bullpen that's hurt, depleted, et cetera, that you must use him?
A guy that's been in the minors for 99% of the season this year is also going to be your closer as you're trying to chase down the playoffs, a World Series, anything like that? No, it's... you have to go with your best guys. And at the end of the day, Brian Abreu is your best guy out there. And even, again, he wasn't good last night, but it is one of those things where Joe Espada, I think, is just going to have to get more creative with the way they use the bullpen. You know, if the best three guys are in the lineup and they're coming up in the eighth inning, that's when you have to put him out there. You don't have to follow the traditional closer role, but no, I don't want to see Craig Kimbrell be the closer for the Astros.
Yeah, I saw that conversation. I was wondering which side you would be on that, because I know Craig Kimbrell's ERA is good and all that stuff. And look, he has surprised me. Like, I'm not, you know, trying to talk bad about Craig Kimbrell by any stretch of the imagination. But who would I want life on the line? Brian Abreu or Craig Kimbrell? I'm going Abreu. Mm-hmm. I'm going Abreu, even though, you know, Kimbrell's ERA is better. See, I actually thought the way that Espada handled the bullpen yesterday was good. Like, you actually got to where you needed to be. They're up two runs in the ninth inning. You got your closer coming in. Like, that's where you want to be. And Brian Abreu let you down. Flat out let you down.
Yeah, and you need him to not do that. And I don't, because even if it's not Kimbrell, I don't even know what the other options would be. If you wanted to explore this conversation of who gets the ball and is De Los Santos?
There's no one else.
Like, you're not gonna, like, Blue Ball's not gonna be your closer. He's gonna be a starter now.
Looked all right.
I like him. That's the positive from yesterday's game. Is he looks good. He can fill a role nicely for the Astros, it feels like. But beyond that, it's the issues that are happening in the back end of the bullpen. Joe Espada is just going to have to earn his money as a manager and figure out what's the best matchups. This is where the Astros should shine, though, I think, Jeremy. Like, you've got this analytics department that has always been front and center, ahead of everyone else in Major League Baseball. You have to rely on that, especially in a playoff series. You got to know, okay, who's going to match up best against the 4, 5, and 6 hitter of the Seattle Mariners, or if you're playing the Rangers or the Red Sox, whoever it is. And you have to go in with a game plan like that and, I think, stick to a script. And I agree with you. Joe Espada did a fine job last night. Brian Abreu just dropped the ball.
You just don't have the pieces. Like, I understand what you're saying, and they're trying to do the best that they can with that. But, like, the names that you're counting on in the bullpen, and look, I like Abreu, it's Craig Kimbrell, who is a little older in his career. You mentioned he hasn't spent a whole lot of time in the bigs this season. And Yael De Los Santos, that a non-playoff team said, see ya. We don't need you in our organization. I like what I see from A.J. Blueball, first time ever in the bigs. This is his rookie season. Probably won't even have enough innings to qualify for his rookie season. J.P. France is back. We haven't seen him quite yet. Brian King, like, he's had a solid season. But he's your second-best reliever right now. Mm-hmm. Okert's had a solid season. He's a journeyman in the bigs. Jaden Murray's currently on this big league team. Lance McCullers is on this big league team.
Nick Hernandez is apparently on.
Go Cougs!
Team. There's not a roster move that's not been announced yet, but he is on the Astros lineup.
Well, we know what it is.
It's Garcia.
Yeah, it's Luis.
Yeah, so they're waiting for it to officially tell us what's happening.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. We'll get to the Luis conversation. We're also going to get to the Jose Altuve conversation. The greatest bad base runner in the history of the game made another gaffe yesterday. We'll discuss that. Joe Espada, is he getting a little closer to that hot seat? I don't know. We'll hand out some game balls from week one as well. And the Texans' biggest problem, like, there's a lot of discourse going on about C.J. Stroud, rightfully so. The biggest problem is that offensive line. We'll take a look at that. Also, some advanced statistic conversation. We love that. 713.
I know analytics has those things out there.
That was a little longer than the normal one. A little longer. David Culley, a little long-winded.
Is that 713.
You don't know what David Culley sounds like?
I forgot. It's been so long.
That's David Culley.
Analytics. I know analytics has.
You don't remember that soundbite?
I don't.
All right. Thanks for listening to us for the last few months.
I don't catch those.
713-780-3776. We're on YouTube at ESPN Houston. We're on Twitter, Joe George Radio. Mm-hmm. I haven't put it in my notes yet. He's at Sack by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. 713-780-3776. Altuve base running gaffe. Luis Garcia maybe done forever as a Houston Astro. 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. This is Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Jeremy and Joe. He's Joe. He's just Joe. Rangers have added to their lead. It's now 5-2. Jake Berger hit a two-run dong Rangers about to sweep the best team in baseball. The wild card lead for the Astros over the Rangers is about to be 2 games in 12 outs.
The Rangers are playing good baseball. I mean, the Brewers haven't been that great recently. They're not playing what they as good as they were earlier in the year. And then the Rangers are playing the Mets, who have been brutal since June, basically.
Yeah.
They've been an awful baseball team.
So the Astros lineup is out for Game 2, which the Astros are turning to George Costanza to again try to be the stopper.
The summer of George!
For them. Jason Alexander, every single time the Astros need a big win, it's Jason Alexander on the mound.
He's your stopper.
It's so weird.
He's your stopper now.
He is your stopper. He's facing Jose Berrios. So that's the pitching matchup tonight. Espada's lineup is out, and it does not have Jose Altuve in it. Jose Altuve is not in the lineup. It's Peña, Yordan, Correa, Walker, Sanchez, Myers, Caratini, Yiner, Urias, which I don't think that they want Altuve playing left field on that turf, but Yordan's playing left field on that turf. So like kind of, that throws a mystery in it. I'm curious what Espada's quotes are going to be because I'm sure he'll be asked about it. I'm sure he'll say scheduled day off. But did Joe Espada just bench Jose Altuve?
It would be deserved, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's
absolutely.
If you're going
yes.
to hold everyone to the same standard, then it makes sense. I mean, that was a terrible play. It was, I mean, look, he's had some bad base running plays, but that to me, and I think a little credit to Vlad Jr., it was a great throw from first,
great
but,
play.
And to be that aware of how slow he was running, but it was not, it's not good. And if he was benched today, it would be, in my opinion, rightfully so.
I think
they're not going to tell us that.
No, they won't tell us that. They're going to protect Jose Altuve. Like they lied to protect Altuve. They did it with the left field thing. Like he's doing it for Bregman. No, that was in the works. Oh, we don't really want him in the leadoff spot. So how can we demote him without you know really saying that? Oh, he needs more time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't need more time when you're the visiting team. Like that really only makes sense at home whenever you're pitching the top of the first inning. I actually thought his plate appearances looked better yesterday. So, like, if you were giving him a day off, it doesn't really make sense to do it today after he had better plate appearances yesterday. They also had the day off on Monday, so that's 2 days off over a span of 3 days. Whenever they – look, sometimes they'll do that. Like, they'll do, hey, we're going to give you the day off going into a day off. That way you have 2 days off. But you're not going to do day off Monday, play Tuesday, day off Wednesday. That ruins the whole idea. Like, you're trying to get them off their feet 2 days in a row to give them an extended break. I'm pretty confident, and you're right, they're not going to say this publicly, so we're never going to have confirmation of it. I am pretty confident saying that Jose Altuve got benched today by Joe Espada, which, okay, Joe, I didn't think that you had the cojones to do that. Like, I admire that a little bit, most interesting manager in the world. It's becoming a little less interesting by the day.
I mean, everything you just went through, but you've got a guy who's going to be a Hall of Famer, and you've put him in left field because he can't play the second base at a very high level. You've then DH'd him most of the season because he can't really play left field either. You moved him down in the order. Now he's not playing today. I mean, they are – whatever's going on behind the scenes, if this is – I like the standard it sets if that's why he's not playing today.
Yeah.
Of that Jose Altuve is not in the lineup because of what happened on the base pass yesterday. It's totally fair if that's the reason why. And even though I agree with you, the swings looked better.
Mm-hmm.
If it was just because of some kind of matchup thing and another day off to really try to really get him going, I'm fine with that too. Like whatever reason they give us is to me acceptable for Jose Altuve not playing. Today.
I think his little behind got benched. I really do. Like it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense that he's sitting for 2 days out of three. Those aren't back to back days. He looked better at the plate yesterday, and there was a very obvious base running, mental, lazy gaffe in the 10th. I think he got benched, which good. Like you have this, the Astros are in a playoff race fighting for their baseball lives. Toronto's like comfortably in the playoffs, but trying to win the division and like try to get home field advantage throughout. And Vladimir Guerrero is busting it down the line. Like a big boy first baseman, mm-hmm. Vladimir Guerrero is busting it down the line to beat out an infield single that, oh, by the way, Jose Altuve was a little slow getting to in the bottom of the 10th. And your best player of all time, which he is the franchise's best player, is taking no secondary lead at second base. That's the thing that bothered me the most about Altuve's base running in the 10th. And I went and I looked at the pitcher-catcher cam, actually, maybe the center field camera. And he does not take a secondary lead whatsoever. Like, he doesn't bounce off the bag at all. At all. And that's, like, Jose Altuve is going to be aggressive, and he's going to run into outs, and he's, like, adorable doing it because he's our guy, all of that stuff. The thing that bothered me the most about what we saw yesterday in the 10th was that it was lazy. It wasn't him being aggressive. It wasn't him being silly and adorable. It wasn't him being dumb. It was Jose Altuve being lazy in a tie game in the 10th with 18 games left to play as you're fighting for your baseball lives. I thought it was inexcusable, and I think that's why Joe Espada benched his butt today.
Yeah, because if he has the lead and he is, you know, thrown at the bag instead of a couple feet in front of it, and his slide not even be able to get his feet don't even get to third base, it's such a bad slide as well. You can find it more acceptable to what you're saying. So it's just, it was a play in which we haven't seen Altuve have, this one's different than a lot of his normal base running errors. You know, a lot of times it's turning, you know, second or turning third and being too aggressive and misreading a ball. But this one, you know that a ball hit the other way, you're gifted a spot on second base, you know you're taking off, you know you're heading to third base, and to get out in that situation. I mean, in the man-for-man like era, this is not something we see very often. Like, that play last night is very rare. We don't see teams being that aggressive for, what, the second out of the inning. Mm-hmm. Typically, they're just like,
first, right,
like, go to first base, get first the out, and that's inning. Fine.
Now, I saw some of the internet discourse about this. They were blaming Espada for not bunting Caratini in that spot. You had a runner at second base with nobody out, and Victor Caratini does what a professional hitter does, and he pulls the ball to the right side because the runner at second base should be bouncing off of second base, getting a good jump, reading the ball on the ground, and getting to third base without a throw. The whole idea that Victor Caratini should have been bunting there is the biggest piece of evidence that you do not know ball. If you're blaming Joe Espada for not bunting Caratini to get the runner at third, when Caratini literally does what a professional hitter is supposed to do and pulls the ball on the ground to the right side, which 99% of the time, 99.9% of the time, is effective and gets the runner over because they're not being lazy at second base, you do not know ball. That was the worst take I saw yesterday during that Astros game. It made me sick.
I hate the bunt conversation because I think bunting is used as it's just like an excuse for when things don't go well on the field, that people always want to resort to, well, you should have bunted. Or Altuve could have read the ball better, got a better lead at second base, and been safe.
How about just get a secondary lead?
Yeah, just, you know.
He's flat-footed when the pitcher is going to the plate. That's unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Unacceptable.
So the bunting doesn't change anything, and there's also no guarantee that he's also not thrown out at third base because of that lead.
Yeah.
You know, if it's a ground ball to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and he's charging, it could easily have been thrown out at third as well if it's just in front of the catcher. So just a bunt doesn't automatically make Altuve safe. So
no.
It's a weak argument in terms of everything was done right on the play. Everything you could have asked for to get Jose Altuve over, to give yourself a lead in the 10th inning, mm-hmm. everything was executed up until Altuve took off from second base the right way.
That's also part of the, like, hey, they should have bunted take, which sometimes, hey, pro bunt, totally understand, get it, but not in an at-bat where the guy pulls the ball on the ground. That makes no sense whatsoever. But you're right. People that are the, like, lay down the bunt crowd. Again, I'm okay with pro bunts, depending on the situation and who's the hitter is that they assume 100% of the time it's going to be successful.
Yes.
And they also assume that the hitter is good at bunting. Like, what if Victor Caratini's the worst bunter in the world? I have no idea. I don't know how good of a bunter he is because we never see bunting. But, like, a manager isn't going to call for a bunt if there's a dude in the box who cannot bunt. So, like, that's the, you know, an added conversation to that. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Willie, you're in with the Jays. What's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Yeah, I was sitting there thinking about my 86 and a half back.
Oh.
Back in June, July, when we was up 20 games with those so-called less-than players, which I don't like. I didn't think we'd be at this point. And when you was talking about Joe probably bitched out Altuve,
mm-hmm.
that's why I called. I don't think Joe made a lineup since he's been there. You know, that's just me personally. And I'm just disappointed right now.
Me too, Willie. Sorry about that bet, too. You got it, Willie. That's going to be tough to get to that 86 win mark. 86 and a half, he said. They're at 78. They have 17 games to go. I guess they – what was the bet, 86 or 87?
I think he said 86 and a half.
So 86. They need to get to 87. That would be 9 and 8. That's in play. It's in play. Are you confident they can go 9 and 8 in the last 17?
I mean, they're not making the playoffs if they don't go at least 9 and 8,
yeah,
I would imagine.
Yeah,
so
probably.
I'm for Willie's sake and for our sake, I'm hoping that they can go one game above 500.
Does 9-8 get them there? 9-8 would give Willie the win, and it would give the Astros the playoffs, yes or no?
I think it does. It feels like the line that Willie got at 86.5 is exactly the line it'll take for the Astros to make or miss the playoffs. Mm,
rough.
I mean, the way the Mariners and the Rangers are playing, at least one of them is going to get there. One of those teams will get to 87 wins.
Brewers got a run in the sixth. It's 5-3. Here come the Brewers. Let's go, Brew Crew. Never been a bigger Milwaukee fan. Willie's point about a spot of not making the lineup, I think, is a fair point. I don't know the semantics and the dynamic between Dana Brown and Joe Espada. I have noticed, though, that there are times when Dana Brown will say things on the flagship on Wednesday morning about the lineup that will come true later that night, and he never did that with Dusty. So I think Willie could be onto something there. Now, I think it's more of a meeting of the minds. Like, hey, this is what I think it should be, Joe. And Joe might give a little bit of, like, not necessarily rebuttal, but just like, hey, this is what I think, and then kind of agree to a lineup. I would guess it's more that. I don't really know their dynamic. I think every MLB team's a little bit different. But I do think Willie's on to something about the lineup coming mostly from the suits in the front office.
Yes, but if Joe Espada wanted to bench someone for performance on the field because of a play like last night, I do think he would have the ability to do so.
I would agree.
Yeah, so like, I agree. I do think like they collaborate
even
together.
Even when it's someone as big as Altuve?
I think so. I think that Joe and Dana could get together early this morning and be like, hey, you know, like we can't let that pass. Like we need to take him out of the lineup today. We have 17 games to go. Like we have to show that we have control of this team. I think that that's what happened. Like complete theory, obviously.
But I think you hit on why I think it's not just Joe Espada, though. You said Joe and Dana. Like we've seen like there be a different set of rules for how. I mean, let's go like to the Verlander contract situation. It was like, yeah, the GM's going to handle the contract, but not Verlander. Verlander, that Jim Crane's going to go play golf and get a deal done. Like I could see Altuve being a big enough name that Joe's got to go get approval. This is complete, you know, just thinking out loud. But I don't know if he could do that move unilaterally on his own.
I don't disagree. I think that's a fair point. I don't know the dynamics, but I think that Joe could also be like, hey, Dana, I'm thinking about benching Altuve today. Are you cool with it? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, as opposed to I'm asking for permission. So like, I don't know the dynamics behind it. Israel says Dana wasn't the GM with Dusty. Yeah, he was. Absolutely. He was the GM with Dusty. They fired Click. And then Dana Brown was hired that January, and they spent an entire season together. And then Dana hired Espada. This is Dana's third year. First one was with Dusty. The last two have been with Espada. So, Israel, you just landed on Bad Take Boulevard. Mm. You just made the list. Dana was
just
the GM
made the
with
list.
Dusty. Absolutely. Unless he's saying that Dusty was the general manager and Dana was his assistant.
Well, that's possible.
He could be saying that. Espada can bench Altuve but won't discipline Fromber. Is that what you guys think?
I think there's a lot
of unknown with the Fromber thing.
I do think there's a little apples and oranges, though. Like, you can replace Altuve for a day at second base. Who's starting instead of Fromber?
Right. It's a little harder to bench a starter
and
turn the rotation.
Take Jose Altuve, take Fromber Valdez out of the rotation for 10 days because you're going to skip a spot through his rotation. So you can't really discipline a starting pitcher in the way you would discipline a
position player. Especially whenever Altuve's been somewhat struggling offensively. You know, I thought he looked better yesterday, but struggling offensively, it's easier to be like, hey, we should give him a reset. You know, it's easier to do that. It's easier to hide. It's not going to be a public benching. It's not. I think what we have here is a private benching, unless something comes out where he's hurt, and then it's like, uh-oh,
that's not even worse.
Yeah. All right, 713-780-3776. Luis Garcia exited yesterday's game. Is his tenure as an Astro over? 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Houston's independent voice for sports talk.
listening to Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Jeremy and Joe. He's Joe. I'm Jeremy. So Luis Garcia left yesterday's game, really right at the onset. Pitched pretty good in the first inning, got a couple of outs in the second, started to labor a little bit. Threw a fastball that StatCast read as a changeup, which is never a good sign. If StatCast is reading your heater as a changeup, things are wrong. And had to leave the game. Five outs into the game, Garcia threw 27 pitches, had to exit. Not great for a team that is down a bunch of pitching, Joe. And this could very likely, in my opinion, be the last time that we see Luis Garcia in a Houston Astro uniform.
Yeah, I mean, him pointing to his arm as soon as the pitch was thrown there and then them having to come out and take him out of the game. I mean, he was gone for what? 2 years?
Pretty much.
Waiting for him to come back, and he got two starts back as an Astro. Yeah, it's with where he's at and his contract and everything, it's hard to not view him as a guy that gets non-tendered at the end of the season at this point, just like the Astros did with Jose Urquidy, who I think has gotten close to pitching for the Tigers this year at some
point.
Has he?
I was wondering. I hadn't heard about him in a while.
But it's, yeah, the safe bet is, unfortunately, that's the last time we're going to see Luis Garcia as a member of the Astros. Because for it to take so long to come back, to have all the setbacks that he did, and even as he started his minor league rehab starts in Sugar Land, the velocity wasn't there. It's hard not to feel like there's some kind of Astros medical malpractice that happened again because of how the velocity started, and then to see him get hurt already right now and for how long it took him to come back. I mean, we don't see Tommy Juan injuries take this long and then typically happen again this quickly. And we don't know for sure it's Tommy John, but it's hard not to think that something's not seriously wrong with him. And he's for sure done for the season at this point.
Yeah, done for the season for sure. Like, best case scenario is like what Aaron Geddy had, where it's like, oh, he felt his elbow was inflamed and there's discomfort, but the UCL is intact. Like, that's best case scenario. Okay, he can rehab that and then get strong for pitchers and catchers and all that. That feels overly optimistic here. Like, if it's that, then Luis Garcia is back when pitchers and catchers report next year and he's in the final year of his club control and he pitches next year for the Astros. If there is any damage to the UCL, he's out for all of next season because it's happened late in the year. He's going into his final year of club control. The Astros are going to non-tender him, as you said, and they're going to save $3 million. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really that simple. If the UCL is intact, Luis Garcia will be back with the Astros when pitchers and catchers report. That's best case scenario. If the UCL has damage on it, they're going to non-tender the poor guy, and he's never going to be an Astro again. He's going to go the Urquidy route where somebody gives him like a 2-year contract, very cheap. You rehab up with us next year, and then you can pitch that following season. It's going to be very similar to Urquidy, but yeah, I'm not very optimistic about it.
No, it's just unfortunate. It's unfortunate for Garcia himself. It's unfortunate for the Astros because while Blue Ball comes in and pitches very well and probably has to be part of your rotation right now. It's they can't catch a break. And you know, JP France is not inspiring me for part of the Astros rotation, or McCullers being back part of the rotation. And none of that is good. And Luis Garcia had a couple moments where you're like, okay, you can kind of see Luis Garcia on the mound, like the guy that you've missed for 2 years. Some of that was still there. And to see him have to leave this quickly, it just puts you in a really bad spot again where, you know, as we were talking about the bullpen in the first segment of the show, it's maybe some of these starters could have helped you on the back end of the bullpen in some capacity by just pushing guys back to give you more time or spot starts or, you know, piggyback opportunities. But now you're just down another guy. And
it was kind of weird how they flip-flopped Luis and Fromber. Like, they didn't really, like, maybe because Fromber can make an extra start in the regular season, they feel like that's more necessary. You know, maybe it was something that they saw on the lineups. Like, okay, we don't want the lefty Fromber going up against the righties of Toronto. It was just kind of weird how, okay, Luis was scheduled to pitch Sunday. Nope, never mind. Flip-flop that. He's going to go on Tuesday. Like, I don't want to think that there was something nefarious there, but it's hard not to way the Astros have handled, you know, injuries and all that stuff this year.
It's not the first time the Astros have made a decision to change when a starter is pitching and it ended in a disaster.
That was a little different. I know where you're going here.
What, Lance?
It was very different.
I know, but he was in the gym one day, was supposed to start in 2 days. The rain delay pushes it back, and he's on the mound, and then Lance McCullers is gone for 2 years, essentially, at that point.
Yeah.
So I don't like the it's just another Astros thing where you can't give them the benefit of the doubt of anything they do with a pitcher at this point. It's like, well, this has happened before. Or, well, why did Justin Verlander really rehab elsewhere outside of just the pandemic happening at the time? It's just another bad day for the Astros medical staff.
Yeah.
That they need to answer for at some point.
You think that they already would have. You know, you would have thought that, but that's not the case. I hate that it got to this point because the Astros need any harms that they can get. I do think that A.J. Blueball gives you more upside at this stage because of Luis's injuries than Luis Garcia does. I hate that it happened because of Luis Garcia being injured, but I do think that the Astros gained upside in their rotation if A.J. Blueball is indeed the guy. Now, where it really hurts is the bullpen because Blueball has been pretty helpful there, and you don't have a lot of arms there. So you think that's the move, that Blueball is just going to be that fifth guy in the rotation? Because you got Fromber, you got Hunter Brown, you got Costanza, you got Christian Javier. You could go to a five or a six man, but just the fifth guy for now. You think it is Blueball?
Yeah. Man, what are your other options?
McCullers, J.P. France, Miguel Ulloa, maybe Ethan Pecco. Those are probably unrealistic, the last two.
I mean, I'd like to see Ulloa come up at some point.
So, yeah. See, I've gone back and forth there.
Why not?
Well, his walk rate's very high. I think it's very difficult for a guy who's kind of fringy to be like, here you go. Go start a game in the pennant race with 17 games, and we really need you, kid.
Yeah, you do need
wins. I think you put him in a really tough spot.
But McCullers hasn't been good enough this year where Blueball, to me, has been plenty good, where I would give him at least one opportunity. It doesn't have to be permanent. You've only got three starts left in the season at this point in the regular season. So if Blueball goes out there and it's not good, you want to put him back into the playoff, you know, back into the bullpen, that's fine. But why would Lance McCullers deserve a spot in the rotation?
No.
At this point.
I mean, he wouldn't.
If they could DFA him, they would.
I would go, they can DFA him.
Well, they won't.
I mean, I don't think there's really a point to DFA him. Like, you're
not at this point.
I mean, you're carrying Nick Hernandez, go Cougs. You're carrying Murray. You're carrying France. Like, there's really no point to DFA him right now. But you're right. He doesn't deserve a start. I would go Blueball, too. Like, Blueball would be my guy. Hey, we're trying to win some ball games. Blueball. If they do go with the Ulloa route at some point, for me, it'd be as a reliever. Not that I want him to be a reliever long term, although he might be because his walk rate's kind of high. I would go, I would use him in the pen. Now, Alex brings up a good point about him being, you know, good in relief. Like, you are losing a weapon when you do that out of the bullpen.
But you're only losing it for 17 days. I mean, I guess you have to make the playoffs first because he'll go back into that role in the playoffs.
That's a good point. Maybe you only use him like twice.
Yeah. You know? So, like, you have him for now, or maybe that is why Lance McCullers, you know, gets that spot. As because you want to keep Blueball. That's, while I would disagree with some of that, you know, reasoning, because I'd rather have the better starter out there, I would understand the logic behind it of keeping Blueball in the bullpen as a weapon for the Astros at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting. Dana was on the quarterback this morning on the flagship, and he kind of alluded to Blueball being in the rotation. Like, we might go that route. So we'll see. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Pena, you're in with the Jays. What's up?
Hey, what's up, Jeremy? Hey, man, what's up? I don't know if you heard this morning show. Lance went on an all-time legendary rant talking about spin rates. And my question for you all is, is it possible or should MLB do something about spin rates? It's like, I don't think it's possible, but if it was, should they? Thank you. Have a great day.
Appreciate it, Pena. Let's react to that on the other side. Spin, velo, chasing spin, chasing velo. Is it worth it? Do you need it? All of that. 713-780-3776. It is Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Houston, the Walmart you thought you knew is now new. Who knew? Did you know that Walmart has more than a half a billion items online? You can find a huge selection online that you can't even find in stores at Walmart.com. Branham family loves ordering online from Walmart. We've been doing it for a long time now. It's wonderful for someone like me. Doesn't have a whole lot of time. Got a lot of football to watch. Doesn't like to mess with a crowd. We order online with Walmart, get all the groceries without having to leave the house. It's great. In fact, we even put things in our cart throughout the week, knowing we like to get a delivery on Sunday, set us up for the week. We put stuff in the cart throughout the week. That way we know it's there. We can rely on them. And we can rely on Walmart because it's Walmart. I know what you're thinking. That's too expensive. Online grocery shopping costs way more. Nope, nope. That's not true at Walmart. Grocery prices are the same for delivery as they are in store. Did you know that? And of course, because it's Walmart, you already know that the prices are super low. And what I love about it, they're fast. Walmart can deliver in as fast as an hour. Going online to Walmart.com, ordering the groceries I need is faster than me, I'm a slowpoke, going to the grocery store and getting the groceries I need. They're going to save you time. Use Express Delivery to get all of the eligible things you need from Walmart. You can get your groceries. You can get your home goods. You can even get prescriptions. Walmart's changing the game with their delivery. So when it comes to feeding your family, hosting a tailgate, throwing a party, flex, think Walmart for all your grocery needs. Start an order today at Walmart.com.
ESPN 97.5.
Now back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios with Jeremy Branham and Joe George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
He's Joe. I'm Jeremy. Spin and Velo. Lance went. I didn't hear the rant. I did see a few people talking about it on Twitter, though. So I guess Lance was anti-spin, anti-Velo.
He feels like it's what's causing all the Tommy Johns.
I think it's a fair stance, absolutely. I don't know how you get away from it, though. Like, general managers, scouts, people who are making draft decisions, free agent acquisitions, who appears in games, guys that get promoted to the roster, like there's a constant. Like, they throw hard, they get a lot of spin. Like, you don't see many junk ballers in Major League Baseball anymore. So I don't know how you get away from it. Like, pitchers, youth pitchers, prep pitchers, all of that, they realize what it takes is to throw hard, spin it a lot, get tons of movement. That's my best chance to get to the bigs. So I don't know how you escape it. I think we've gone too far.
I think it's hard to return at this point back to a sense of normalcy. This could put me on Bad Take Boulevard, but I have a theory about another injury that's happening in sports, and I think they're kind of connected to this. My concern in the NBA with what we're seeing with happening with torn Achilles, I think, is correlated in a way to what we're seeing with Tommy John. The fact that these kids are playing one sport all year round, all they're doing. I mean, we're seeing, I mean, Tyrese Halliburton has played more basketball than Kobe Bryant ever did until he was older, because you're playing year round. Same thing with baseball. You're throwing all year round. And it wasn't like that before. Like, even like where I grew up in Illinois, like, you didn't play baseball. There was nothing going on in the winter. You had strength and conditioning drills, and that's it. But now they play in the winter. They play indoors. They play in different areas. I think that, because that to me is where I feel like this starts, is the specialization of sports, and you're just throwing all the time. You're constantly putting your body in the same motion is, to me, causing these injuries. Or at least it's the first thing you can try to stop.
Yeah.
But there's no way to prove it. And even for it to be fixed, Jeremy, how long would it take to fix it? Like, even if they said national law, you can't throw a curveball until you're 15. Like, we couldn't see, like,
See, there's studies that say that's not the best thing to do, though. There's studies now that are saying you should actually start it earlier.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's, like, it builds up the ligament or whatever. Like, I think you're onto something about the year-round. And look, like, these muscles and tendons and all that stuff, UCL, Achilles, whatever, there's mileage. Like, whenever you're working out a muscle, whatever, and like, if you're working out a muscle, then you're working out a ligament. And I famously know about working out. You're going to put strain on whatever it is you're working out. And that's how you build muscle, is that you break it down, it recovers, it gets big. Mm-hmm. So doing it year round, you're not really allowing recovery to take place. I do agree that it's bad to do all of this stuff year round. I do think there's a reason for that uptick. I think there's a lot of variables. I used to be anti-pitch clock being a variable. I think I'm coming around to it is. Because, like, if you're working out too, like, are you more susceptible to injury doing your bunch of sets in a row or taking time between them? Like, you're safer to take time between them.
Yeah, and I think that the players, that's something that they're going to have to make a decision, you know, during the lockout or potential lockout, the CBA negotiations. Like, is that going to be that important for them to die on that hill of just making sure that, hey, we're not going to, we can't keep the pitch clock. It's causing these injuries. I do think, I don't know how Major League Baseball proves it. one way or the other, but I think you do have to look into it. And while I think the pitch clock's been better for baseball.
Yeah, I do too.
It's been good for the game.
It's been good for the viewing experience. It might be bad for the pitchers.
Yes. And that's a delicate balance because you need your best pitchers out there to have a watchable product. But your product was also less watchable when it was taking forever to be accomplished.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to find some kind of balance without also them making the game too gimmicky. So I don't know what that is, but
yeah.
If players think the pitch clock is a major part of this problem, then they should be allowed to voice that and get rid of it, no matter what it means for the
players. Wait, and there is a CBA coming up where like it's a natural time in the sports world or the MLB world to be able to try to negotiate that through your CBA. The eliminating velo and spin, though, and like the chase of it, though, is never going away. Like, that's my pushback to that. It's like, okay, like, I don't want corners that are running 4.2s anymore. That's never going to happen. Like, I don't want receivers who can run a 4.2, 3.40. That's never going to go away. Why? Because it's valued. It's valued to have fast football players. It's valued to have strong football players. Same thing with baseball pitchers. It is valuable to throw really, really hard. It is valuable to throw with a lot of spin. So because it is valued and it is a commodity, it's never going to go away. And because it's valued to the state that it is, all of these prep pitchers are going to chase the heck out of it. I know Manfred's plan was like, or at least idea, not, maybe not a plan, but was like the starting pitching inning pitch minimum, where like they have to go X amount of innings. You're like, you lose your DH, which that's to your point where it becomes a bit gimmicky there. I don't know what the right answer is.
Yeah, because if you're demanding a guy go six innings, but then what happens when he's tired after four innings?
Yeah, I think TK, who comes on with us every Friday, brings up a great point, too. He's like, if you're really concerned about pitcher injuries, why are they limiting the amount of pitchers you can have on your 26-man roster?
Have more
like,
pitchers.
Or even, like, yeah, maybe not even more roster spots. Like, yeah. We're going to have a 26-man roster, 28 in September. Do with it what you want. You want to carry 12 position players because you want 14 pitchers? You can do that. 11 and 15? You can do that. I think it's a great point.
I mean, with the DH, like honestly, like, what do you really need from a backup perspective? You need a backup catcher.
You need a backup catcher, backup infielder, backup outfielder. So you can get away with 12, I
guess. Especially if that catcher can also play first base. Like you're good. You need someone that can catch and play first, and then someone that can play second, short, and third. But you always need someone on the roster to be able to do those different things in one outfield. Like you can drop the amount of hitters you have on your roster if you want. I think roster expansion is probably just the solution to this a little bit, but specifically adding pitchers to the roster.
The problem doing that, though, is that the length of the starting pitcher does get devalued because you can have more guys you go to. Because like you could have 14 pitchers and you just fill it up with the bullpen the entire day. You could go 9 pitchers and then have the next day you can go 9 more with only 5 of those pitching back-to-back days, and then you could have like this rotation where you never even need a starter. Mm-hmm. And they do want to avoid that. So I think that's why they're trying to keep pitcher roster limits down. But there's cons to that as well. There's no real good solution. And that's why Manfred's coming up with that gimmicky starting pitcher, go six, you lose your DH or else. Because nothing else would be like significant enough for the starting pitcher to exit the game.
And also, like the reality is whatever you try is probably not going to work. I mean, think back to Dusty Baker, his final year, one of his final years in Washington. You know, they had one of the best teams in the National League. They were surging. And they had a young phenom who looked like he was going to be the best pitcher in baseball, and Steven Strasburg. And they shut him down.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want him to get hurt.
And then he retired early.
And then he had to retire early because all he did ever after that was get hurt. And the Nationals went out of their way to protect him, and it didn't work. And then Dusty Baker also had guys who, as rookies, Mark Pryor was throwing 130 pitches a game, and it ruined his career. There's no perfect science to fix this. And it's been a problem for longer than we've realized, but the amount of Tommy John now is just, it just sucks.
That's why I would never spend big free agent money on pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
Like just have a collection of like big arms and just run right through them. Like the Astros currently do. Joe George, I agree with you 100% being a single sport and not having it. The rest they need when they're young, wear and tear on the arms, Achilles is killing them. Good take. Good take. I call BS on all of that. See John Kruk. I don't think John Kruk was playing year round though. So I think he might.
No, because he was probably playing center and wrestling. he's not playing baseball year round.
Wouldn't the payroll structure have to change if you added players? Yeah, marginally. It would have to change a little bit.
Well, with a salary cap, they can figure that out.
Maybe they need to model some of off-season routines of players like Nolan Ryan, old-school players that pitch for years without major injuries. It is weird how like they were flamethrowers then. Like, how was Nolan Ryan so an Iron Man?
I think that's what Lance is talking about with spin. It wasn't as – they weren't spinning as much back then. Like, they had movement, but it's not like it is now. They're not worried about
I don't know, man. You don't think Sandy Koufax was getting up at 3,000 RPM?
Maybe, but like, I think it's, but they, but the, it just feels like the way, because they focus on it. Like they're intentionally, like, they're looking at, like, look at my RPMs. Look at my pitch machine. It tells me what my pitch movement is and how it's doing. And if it's not doing it, you do more torque and you do more to it. Where, like, those guys, it's natural. It's who they are. These guys are, they're creating pitchers in a lab. And having their bodies do things that are not natural.
But what's the alternative? I'm just not going to be a big league pitcher. Like, they're going to take the risk because it's worth it.
There's not a good alternative.
Yeah, there's not. Maybe allow steroids for recovery. That's a great idea. I blame the pitch clock. I do think the pitch clock is a little bit of a variable. I really do. I've come around on that. I used to be anti that. No way. I'm starting to move over to the other side when it comes to that. Charlie Huff was a knuckleballer, though. He threw a knuckleball.
We need more of that back in our lives.
I would take a knuckleballer that can give me 180 innings a year. Give my number five starter. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's overreact to week one. Week one of the NFL season. What are our big overreactions to the first week of the NFL season? 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe on ESPN at 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.